In this third prayer today, it comes as Moses meets with God on Mount Sinai. In Exodus 19, we find that God was revealed again to Moses, having first met him in the bush, you remember, the burning bush. And he goes back down the mountain and gives God's instructions to the people of Israel. They agree to do everything that God commands them. But Moses goes back up the mountain to convey to God the people's agreement. So God tells Moses that he will appear on the mountain in 3 days and to warn the people to get ready to worship him and not to come too close. And on that day, there appeared fire and smoke, and God called Moses to come up to the top of the mountain again and to bring Aaron with him. In the following chapters, there seems to be an awful lot of going up and down the mountain with various elders, instructions about priests and building the tabernacle for God's presence among them. When God finally gets to the end of all these instructions, he gave Moses two stone tablets with the terms of the covenant. But Moses, who represented to the people God's presence, had been away a long time. It wasn't just 5 minutes, as Kitty was telling me the other day. Mummy and Dad have gone for 5 minutes, she said, but it's a lot longer than that. And the people got restless because it had been 40 days and 40 nights. Today, we look briefly at the prayer that is the exchange between Yahweh and Moses on the mountain from verses 7 to 14. As God tells Moses, "Your people have corrupted themselves." One thing is important as we begin this morning, that God is transcendent. Now, that's a big word, and I have this little book, which I sometimes use when I come across big words, written partly by a friend of ours, Theological Terms, a pocket dictionary. You should get one. Just so that you know, the vicar has problems with big words too. To say that God is transcendent is to say that he is wholly and distinctively separate from his creation. That is why the first commandment is so important. You cannot make anything to represent God, idol or image. Moses repeats this to the people again after they'd first heard it, and again in chapter 20 after hearing the noise, the smoke and the fire from the mountaintop. The children of Israel had a long wait while Moses has gone back up the mountain again. You know, waiting, that requires discipline, and in this case, faith and a lot of patience. The people lost patience waiting for Moses to get back, so they asked Aaron to fix things for him. Although the Israelites set about making what they thought was an honouring image to be the focal point of their worship, they had broken the first commandment. Having done this, they were no longer constrained. The revelry which accompanied their worship of the golden bull was informed by the cultures round about them, and in complete disregard for the holy lifestyle instruction Moses was just then receiving from God on the mountain. It's the same with the church. When it no longer understands who God is, then it is only natural for it to define itself according to the cultural norms that are current within society, just as Israel did. And when the church does this, we cease to be the holy people of God. People desire the unconditional love of God, but hold back from following the instructions about how to live under the new covenant today. Just as the people of Israel failed to act on the instructions given to Moses for living under the old covenant. Verse 7, we read that God has seen the result of the people's impatience and tell Moses to go down the mountain quickly and that he will destroy them and start again. Verse 11, Moses reminds God of his covenant with his forebears, you remember, Abraham, Isaac and Israel, and how destroying the children of Israel would be interpreted first of all by the Egyptians and then by the other nations round about. That the God of Israel is as capricious as the gods of Egypt. Moses appeals to God for God's name's sake. God responds by telling Moses that he will make a nation out of him alone, and he could have done. But Moses puts himself on the line with the people, and God relents from destroying them. Although their lives are spared, God's justice is not compromised. there are consequences. None of these people enter the promised land, only those who subsequently are born in the wilderness wanderings. We might have thought that Jacob was pretty radical bargaining with God and whittling down from 50 righteous persons in Sodom to just 5. Moses' bargaining with God is on the basis of there being no righteous people there at all, as God has seen, not a single one. And then as the one to whom God has made the promise, counting himself, Moses, amongst all these unrighteous people. Moses appeals to God's mercy. This is the Hebrew word hesed, God faithfully keeping his covenant promises and maintaining his relationship with his people in spite of their unfaithfulness. But lest we think to argue that God does change, the covenants are not unconditional. God's regret is not with making his promises, but that people lack trust and are unfaithful. The Israelites assume the worst, both concerning Moses and God, that they've been abandoned in the wilderness. Looking out of my study window, the amount of visible sky changes with the seasons as the trees change. Right now they're in full leaf. They remind me how gradually things can creep upon us, and that we can let our circumstances cloud our vision of the blue sky. That's the always presence of God. We call that the omnipotence of God. That's another big word for you. In the lockdowns, the confines of space and time can and often do weigh us down, giving us such anguish of mind that life doesn't seem worth living anymore. Faith gives us courage to believe that even when God seems to be silent and my prayers desperate, God's sovereign purposes are for the blessing of all that he has made. Faith is the sight that reaches through the trees and beyond the grey leaden skies or the iron bars of space and time. Faith leads to a new world of such wonder and perfection that my mental and physical suffering is not dismissed, but held by a more powerful hope that the reality of the resurrection of Christ brings. It's a good thing to remind God of his promises and to ask him to have mercy. It's also a good thing to ask God for strength to forbear the anxiety of waiting when God seems to be absent. In Philippians we read, "For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength." And the letter to Peter says, "So be truly glad. There is a wonderful joy ahead, even though you must endure many trials for a little while. These trials will show you that your faith is genuine. It is being tested as fire tests and purifies gold, though your faith is far more precious than mere gold. So when your faith remains strong through many trials, it will bring you much praise and glory and honor on the day when Jesus Christ is revealed to the whole world."